From 90.7 WFAE Charlotte, 90.3 WFHE Hickory, welcome to Charlotte Talks. I'm Chris Clackham, sitting in for Mike Collins. Here we are anticipating the arrival of spring, although many still doubt how soon it's really going to get here, especially in light of the recent batch of winter storms and frigid temperatures just within the last week or so. But the gardening enthusiasts amongst us are advising we take full advantage of this time staying warm indoors to get a jump on a vegetable or flower garden that will move when it warms up outdoors. And for our part of the country, that's really only a few weeks away. So to provide lots of information and examples of resources and options to prepare for spring gardening, we've put together a panel of gardeners, master gardeners, if not master gardeners, at least masters of the universe in gardening when it comes to that subject, right here for Charlotte Talks. In fact, there are some of the most popular go-to people anytime anyone has any questions about what remains the number one hobby in America, backyard gardening. By the way, feel free to ask your questions by going to our website, wfae.org/Charlotte Talks, or tweet us, or go to our Facebook page. I got people watching all three places, or should I say Mike Collins has on loan to me some of his people. Joining us for all of these guys have been here before. David Blackley, master gardener, owner of Renfro Hardware in Matthews. David, great to see you.
Great to see you again, Chris.
Jeff Reeves is a horticulturist, a former North Carolina Cooperative Extension agent, a teacher about all things gardening. Plus, you've gotten into this business of the business of gardening.
That is true. Good morning.
What about?
Well, one of the things that I learned when I was working for Cooperative Extension is that a lot of our producers, particularly producers of local food in the Charlotte area, grow a really good crop of food. Mm. And the next step for them is to learn how to be good business people as well. And so that's what I'm trying to help them do.
Sell the stuff that they are growing.
Exactly right.
Fantastic.
One of the things about sustainability is turning a profit, because if you're not profitable, you're not sustainable.
Jeff, great to see you. Great to have you here again.
Thank you.
Rosenberg is a master gardener and founder of Instant Organic Garden. Also wrote a book, No Green Thumb Required, Organic Gardening Made Easy, which you had, Don, you had on sale at the Southern Spring Show this past weekend, where you also gave seminars and talks on backyard gardening in general. Great to see you again.
Good to see you guys.
Let me begin with, what does everybody have in their indoor gardening or garden, or even the garden outside? What you got growing right now in your garden, David?
Well, about the third or fourth week of January, it got dry enough to get the tractor out, and we worked up ground, and we've got broccoli, Brussels sprouts, cabbage, a lot of them, and we put cover on them. They survived the cold weather, but now they're drowning, so we're just not sure. If we get a few more sunny days, I'll be more encouraged.
When you talk about covering, you insulated them against the cold. How so?
Well, it's not so much insulating them from the cold. It's just protecting them from the wind. It's a real light fabric, kind of a synthetic cheesecloth that you can put on them. So if there is a frost, usually the frost lands on the fabric, and it just holds that ground heat in a little more. The wind is the enemy of young, tender plants in the wintertime.
And you're propping it up. It's a tent-like structure over the plant.
Not with this snow and ice we had. We just let it lay flat, and it just flattened out the plants, but they've kind of perked back up. We pulled the cover off this week. My daughter did.
What is it, Don Rosenberg, about the popularity of backyard gardening? I mean, this trend really started, you can almost pinpoint it, with the abundance of farmers markets, and there's been just a ton of backyard gardening going on in this country, especially over the last 10 years. What do you attribute that to?
Well, I don't think it's a trend. I think everybody's always been a backyard gardener. It's just that society has changed two things. Everybody has two or three jobs, you know, two or three ex-wives, you know, and they're, you know, two or three kids, they're running around like crazy, and they don't have time to be doing a traditional, huge in-ground garden. And so the other thing is that they have big houses and tiny yards now. Used to be everybody had an acre or two. Mm. Now they've got a yard the size of a postage stamp. So a big garden really doesn't work for everybody. So my approach is always, as you know, raised beds. but also making very small spaces extremely productive. So you can feed two adults in with a 3x8 trellis raised bed.
And something that you can do, Jeff Reeves, on your patio. You don't necessarily have to have a plot of land, so to speak.
That's true. Container garden is another thing that's come on really strong. And, you know, there's a lot of ways to think about containers. When I was an extension agent, I was in Union County, and I lived on the backside of a farm that had been split up into several different places. And walking through the woods on the creek one day, I found the old farm trash pile, and in it was parts of an old washing machine. So I took the tub out of that washing machine and turned that into a plate, and I planted a patio peach tree in it, some of the best peaches that I'd had, and I grew a lot of other things in containers just as kind of a research project.
Yeah, patio peach tree?
They were very clean, too, because they were in the washing machine.
Yep. exactly right there.
But the question, I thought that trees especially needed just this vast root system, the ability to go down deep.
Well, a patio tree is very, very small. It's an ultra dwarf. I mean, it never got over 4 feet tall. Had multiple small peaches. Maybe the biggest they ever got was maybe the size of a ping pong ball. Absolutely delicious.
Concentration of the sweet, Don?
Oh, totally.
Yeah. Justin on Facebook has already written in and asked this, and this is a great way to start off. So, what plants should I grow at home to save the most money at the grocery store, like tomatoes and basil? And, Don, I'm going to let you take this because you're a big advocate of keeping it simple in the garden.
Totally. Well, you mentioned tomatoes. Now, everybody always gets confused about what they plant and when. And there's two seasons in Charlotte. There's the cool season, and then there's the summer. And the cool season is the spring and the fall. And you really, in a raised bed, you can be planting your cool season crops on February 15th. Unfortunately, it's been even too wet for a raised bed garden right now. And so your tomatoes are summer crops. Pretty much anything that you grow, you want to avoid the things that are inexpensive, onions and sweet potatoes and potatoes and so on. Those are great to grow, but if you have a limited space, you want to concentrate on crops that give an ongoing harvest, like leaf lettuce instead of iceberg lettuce. You know, again, tomatoes. Pretty much everything you grow is expensive in the stores now, and it's only going to get more expensive, especially if you try to buy something organic in the stores. It's always very expensive.
Okay, David Blackley, is it too late to be growing, to plant out in your garden?
Mm-hmm.
The cabbage, the Brussels sprouts, the broccoli, the cauliflower that you just mentioned that's already in yours, is it too late to...
Plenty of time.
But you can start that indoors.
Sure, you could start it indoors. Some of them you can just direct seed outdoors. We like to tell people there's something you can plant every day of the year and something you can eat every day of the year out of the garden in this climate we're in. But the high food value per acre, so to speak, crops would be something like tomatoes or squash in the summer. And then in the fall and the winter, Swiss chard. Swiss chard, you just keep cutting and it just keeps coming back. The leaf lettuces. There's no reason you can't have a scallion onion in your backyard about 8 or 10 months of the year.
But practically speaking, again, the person who just has the small piece of land that they're going to eventually transplant, what they're starting indoors, that can start just about anything right now indoors.
Sure. You got to sort of back up from when you're going to set the plant out. You wouldn't put a tomato out normally before tax day, so you would just be starting them now. But there are plenty of people that start tomatoes or peppers or eggplants January and pot them up a couple times. There's an enormous amount of gardening going on in kitchens right now.
With the sunlight being provided in the windowsill?
Best bet is fluorescent light, like you would see in a room like this. The second best would be sunlight in the windowsill. But fluorescent light real close to the seedlings is important. You can definitely grow a plant in low light conditions that'll just fall over and droop. So
you can have so much control, Jeff.
Yeah, well, we did a class on this back in January. I do regular classes at Renfro Hardware. And we did a class on this very thing, and going back to the issue about light. That windowsill needs to be very, very sunny if that's the only source of light you're going to have. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, the plants are going to stretch out, and they're going to lean toward that source of light. And they can be kind of spindly. So the ideal thing is, you know, just
fluorescent light on, yep, close to the planter.
4 foot shop lights, the cheapest thing you can get. And there are some that look a little bit nicer than others if you're worried about the aesthetics. In fact, the ones I made a multiple flat grow chamber, if you want to call it that. I bought a metal shelf unit and hung two of these shop lights on each shelf, and I could do 20 flats easily. That's a lot of plants. Now, everybody didn't have to do that, but you know, it's really quite simple.
About 72 plants per flat.
It depends on what you're using.
Yeah, what size? You know, gotcha.
And you don't have to buy the fancy flats. I mean, I've started stuff, yogurt cups and rolled up newspaper.
Nancy Bracey was recommending a week before last that you start out with egg cartons, the old recycled paper egg cartons. But the key being that you have the light, and it's consistent light, and it's how much light per day?
Well,
I've heard that.
You can get real technical about foot candles and all like that. When you get up, turn the light on. When you go to bed, turn the light off. That's really simple.
That's what I do.
You know, that's all you got to do. That's all you got to do.
Advocate of starting inside, Don?
Not in the slightest. Again, these guys are experts. And the people that I meet, again, they're moms. They've got the kids.
Right.
They're running around. And so we all know that starting seeds outdoors in the garden where they're going to be growing is really the best way. And I know these guys will agree. And if you get late, then go over to Renfro Hardware and buy some transplants for some of those.
Buy the
crops.
Plants that you have already prepared.
And then you'll gain 3 weeks of growing. So normally I would have planted my lettuce and spinach and carrots and broccoli out on February 15th. But we just can't do that right now because it's so darn wet. And so instead, you know, you can plant some of the seeds, and they always do best there. There's none of this Jiffy pots and grow lights and so on and so forth and misting and so on. Just put them out in the garden, and many of the seeds, just plant them right now.
Let's move on to a question from Sarah on Facebook. What's a good mix for vegetable garden soil? Compost, manure, garden soil, nutrients.
Yeah.
Who wants to take that?
Yeah.
All three, all the above.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you can spend a lot of money on buying really good mixes. You know, there are a lot of good mixes out there. And to me, you get what you pay for. You know, if you're going to use the cheap stuff, you can expect some cheap results. Now, can you make your own? Yeah, if you got a good source of compost. And, you know, even some of the clay soils that we have, they don't drain quite as well as a good garden mix, but you can buy all kinds of really good mixes out there. The key is drainage, and you want it to hold the optimal amount of water, not the maximum amount. We've got plenty of that already. It's called red clay. And also you want it to be able to retain some of the nutrients for the plants to take up so it can help feed itself.
A wonderful water retainer to put around your established plants. Crushed leaves from the fall. Mm-hmm. Is there any place, David, that you can get crushed leaves in case I forgot to compost mine last fall?
Not that I can really think of other
compost
than
Compost Central? Compost.
Possibly. They may be more composted than just crushed leaves.
But the benefit of leaves being?
Well, there are very few pesticide residue in leaves, and they've got a lot of minerals in them. The tree is brought up.
Yeah, the ability to retain the moisture.
Absolutely.
Again. That's David Blackley, Master Gardener, owner of Renfro's Hardware. Also with us, Jeff Reeves, horticulturist, former NC Cooperative Extension agent, and Don Rosenberg, Master Gardener. Back with more right after this.
Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members in Atrium Animal Hospital and Wellness Center, providing holistic animal health care for 18 years. Offering pet parents a strategy to achieve and maintain furry family vitality. AtriumAnimalHospital.com. Tomorrow on Charlotte Talks, well, over the next 15 years, Charlotte will grow faster than any other large city in the United States, according to a new UN study of world population growth. The Queen City could grow by 71% by 2030, due in part to a strong economy and low cost of living. But what does this population boom mean for demands on healthcare, implications to politics and business and infrastructure? We find out when Charlotte Talks, tomorrow at 9 on 90.7 WFAE.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu addresses Congress, reaction to this speech here and abroad, and efforts to reduce U.S.-Israeli tensions over a possible nuclear agreement with Iran.
Join the conversation on The Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 to noon after Charlotte Talks on 90.7 WFAE, Charlotte's NPR news source.
Or the world, so.
Back on Charlotte Talks, I'm Chris Clackham sitting in for Mike Collins. Our guests today include David Blackley, Jeff Reeves, Don Rosenberg. We're talking about backyard gardening. You wanted to weigh in, Don Rosenberg, on what constitutes organic soil?
Well, we were talking about a soil recipe. And again, I want things to be easy, but I also want things to be affordable. And so going and buying a bag of potting mix, organic, you know, potting mix, you know, is it for $9.99 a bag is crazy. So in a 3x8 bed, you might need 22 cubic feet of soil. And so what I recommend is this inexpensive topsoil in the bags. And you can look at it and see, oh, this is pretty decent stuff. It's not real topsoil that has lots of weeds in it. It's just basically a compost pine bark kind of thing that they manufacture. And they call, you know, maybe there'll be some sand in it. And then you mix that with cow manure compost.
Hmm.
And again, this would be a recipe for a raised bed, maybe 50% topsoil by volume and then 50% cow manure compost. And that gives you a super soil to be working with. And, you know, going organic with your fertilizers is extremely important because the synthetic fertilizers are salt-based and they start to kill the life in the soil.
Mm-hmm.
And it's that life in the soil that lets the – it breaks down the minerals in the soil so the plant roots can take them up.
Good examples of organic fertilizer, David?
Any of the Espoma products are very popular, Plant Tone, Holly Tone, Tree Tone. Everybody's pretty familiar with that. And I've never had a customer kill a plant with organic fertilizers.
There are some organic farmers that I know that use no commercial fertilizers at all. Everything is what they create.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
How do you think they create it?
Well, we were talking about compost during the break. And compost is compost. It's not really a fertilizer. If you measured it, it would be 0.5, 0.5, 0.5.
Mm.
So I believe that you need to add nutrients to the soil. And the other fertilizer is worm castings, which is worm poop. And that's available at the better garden centers. And then you can get your Plantone at the big box stores.
You were advocating keep the garden simple. But there is a movement that's kind of getting traction in the Charlotte area. It's been going on in other parts of the country and now getting traction in the Charlotte area that I know that some churches and charities have been doing for a long time in the Charlotte area, and they're advocating more people get involved. That is, plant something that you're going to end up donating to a soup kitchen, to a Second Harvest Food Bank supplies the
Friendship Gardens, all those kind of people.
Friendship mm-hmm. Gardens, Friendship Trays, something that even the Boy Scouts
sure.
have had gardens where they have donated their entire crop. But the concept being here that if you're a backyard gardener, plant one extra tomato plant, squash plant, cucumber plant.
Mm-hmm.
Take the yield from that. Good idea, Dave?
Sure. A lot of Eagle Scout projects are involved in gardening now, and there are many organizations that can take it, or at least just take it to a neighbor or take it to a shut-in or take it to somebody that's not able to garden anymore that used to.
Yeah.
Union County Master Gardeners have done for several years a project called Plant a Row for the Hungry, where they work to coordinate folks that are doing that. And you can call the extension office in Union County. That's where I used to work.
Mm.
And you can arrange for pickup or delivery of stuff. You know, I don't know how many pounds they did last year, but every year it's a few more and a few more. And, you know, we're getting food to people that really do need it.
Don?
I do a lot of consulting with churches and schools that want to have their own gardens. Again, the problem is finding the volunteer help to weed those gardens.
Mm-hmm.
So I help them set up a garden that's easy to manage as opposed to one where they've got to say, okay, it's June 15th. I need 20 volunteers on their hands and knees pulling weeds out of this garden. So I help people bypass that horrible process of weeding gardens.
Well, when you talk about needing 20 people to weed the garden, that garden has been neglected.
No way. Yeah. When you use
I would make an argument that that garden has been neglected for the previous week, whereas
they're not real gardeners if they're not full of weeds.
What can the average gardener expect to spend in the garden on a daily basis, David?
Minutes, not long.
Yeah. That if you stay on top of problems like weeds and watering.
It's kind of like cleaning a house or cleaning a bathroom. You just sort of stay ahead of it, and it doesn't become a chore.
I'd agree with that. I mean, you know, it's the thing where, you know, keep it simple. Visit the garden. Here's the thing. What are you going to do when you're drinking coffee in the morning? You know, take your cup of coffee out while you're doing, pull a few weeds, maybe pick a tomato and have that, you know, have that with your eggs. Mm. It's a very, very simple thing to carve out, as David said, just a few minutes every day. And that way you don't get this situation where you're pulling your hair out as while you're trying to pull the weeds.
There's you're involved, Jeff Reeves, in the Grow Local movement.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
and Don, it's not much of a leap to make that if you should eat local.
Oh, totally. Totally. And there are restaurants now that are getting a large part of their produce from, you know, locally, and also their meats. And it's you can't trip over yourself, you know, at a restaurant in Charlotte without hearing that it's locally grown. There's so many different groups that are supporting that. It's really wonderful.
Great way, Jeff.
Here's the thing. What we need to do is recreate the local food culture that existed in North Carolina for a long time. And I use the word culture on purpose because culture deals with people. And people are the ones that eat. People are the ones that grow. People are the ones that prepare. The more of us, whether it's, you know, growing food and preparing food and eating food at home or growing it for sale or eating and asking about local food whenever we're out, you know, not only are we going to be eating more healthy, we're also going to put some more money back into the local economy. You know, even if, you know, NC State did this report, it's been several years ago now, you know, food in North Carolina is a $35 billion, and that's with a B, billion-dollar industry. And if people just spent 10% of their food dollars on that, we'd put $3.5 billion back into the North Carolina economy. That's a stimulus.
There is Ernie in Charlotte wrote in with a question. Can you address the importance of using native plants in the landscape to support local pollinators that every gardener needs?
Yeah, we did a class on that back in October at the Renfro Farm. I'm a big believer in diversity in the garden. When you're planting those vegetables, put out some flowers, put out anything that is going to attract a pollinator. A lot of native plants really are good beneficial insect pollinator attractors, but there are a lot of other just general plants that people already have in their garden. You know, a lot of the asters are great for that. Some of the mints. David and Presley have even taught me a neat little trick. You know, don't pull out your coal crops quite so quick and let them go to flower. And a lot of the beneficials love the flowers on mustard and collards and broccoli and stuff like that. You know, so if you're not tight for space, that's a good way to do it. Let me give you, for instance, if I can.
Sure.
When I was farming, gardening, when I was with Extension in Union County, the house at the time was surrounded on three sides by soybean fields. Stink bugs, kudzu bugs are awful in soybeans. The first year I tried to do that, I had to fight kudzu bugs and stink bugs all season long. And by accident, I started planting some other things, some aromatic herbs, different kinds of herbs. And for the next two or three years, I could count the number of stink bugs on one hand and never had any more kudzu bugs. You know, and that made me a believer. There's a lot of different ways to deal with pests and insects than using pesticides.
And there's definitely a way to go organic with that, Don.
Well, yeah, that's true. The best controls are, you know, organic pest control methods. You know, in the South, we have a rule that if it crawls, it dies. You see something crawling on your tomato plant, you got to get out the 7-Dust and fumigate your whole backyard. But we know that 90% of the bugs are good bugs.
Mm-hmm.
And if you give them half a chance, they'll eat the bad bugs.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to see what's bothering you and then find an organic control for that particular pest as opposed to just killing everything that crawls.
Got any ladybugs for sale at Renfro Hardware, David? I know that is a favorite organic way of dealing with pests in the garden.
Well, I think the questioner really is more on target. If you have native plants, it stands to reason you're not going to need fungicides and all the fertilizers, and the natives are already in tune with the habitat that other beneficials need. So diversity in native plants is a great way to avoid the chemical shelf bottles.
Well, Joe in Charlotte writes in and says, my question's regarding growing milkweed from seeds indoor. We've gotten interested in trying to start a butterfly garden to help the potentially endangered monarch butterfly populate. And what do you recommend?
Well, we do sell milkweed seeds, and my daughter has perfected growing the milkweed seeds into little plants, and that's kind of tough to do. They probably better talk to her because she's got the amount of time she keeps them in the refrigerator and all these sorts of things. But milkweed is a great way to bring back the monarchs, and it's a beautiful plant, and I think we've made real inroads with that. It's kind of like the bluebird story 20 years ago, but milkweed and some of the other related Joe Pye weed and all those sorts of things are great for the native insects.
Jeff?
There are two different species of milkweed you can plant. One of them is what we commonly refer to as butterfly weed. That's a little orangey one. That one doesn't transplant all that great. So what I would do, if you can collect some of the seed or buy some of the seed, wherever you want it, just sprinkle the seed out there, mm-hmm. preferably in the fall, let it do its thing over the wintertime. It should sprout the next spring. Now, the other one, the one that the monarchs really like is the taller milkweed, and I cannot call the specific on that. But again, that one, what I normally do with stuff that I know will grow outside, I'll take maybe half or two-thirds of it and just sprinkle it in the area where I want it to grow. And then take my others and plant them and transplant them if I need to. That way I've got a backup. Usually that results in an awful lot of plants for me. And, you know, the thing I'll say, Presley's done a really good job with the stuff she's got going on, especially growing the milkweed and things like that. For a lot of folks, if they want to get seeds and stuff, the simplest thing, and that goes back to something you said, just put it out there in the ground. But the timing's really important. And I think you'd be better off done in the fall and let it net, because that's what would happen. The seed would fall to the ground in the fall and be out there over the winter, and that action goes back and forth, and that helps it germinate.
Planting the flower seeds, the pollinator attractors, mm-hmm. planting them close to your vegetable plants, is that what we're talking about, Don?
Pretty much. You know, the other thing is some weeds. Leave yourself a little natural area, because the little tiny flowers in the weeds also attract beneficial insects.
Like chickweed?
Chickweed. But the best attractor for honeybees to your property is the clover that grows in your lawn. Mm-hmm. Leave the clover. Quit using the broadleaf herbicides, and you're going to have bees.
Mm-hmm. Shelley on Facebook. Don, you're going to have to tackle this one. I've struggled with raised bed gardens, how to construct them. I've used untreated lumber, but they deteriorate in just a few years due to all the watering. How bad is it to use treated lumber, and are there some sources for it that are better than others?
Oh, I get that question all the time. And I'm not a perfectionist. I want things to work well in the garden. And it's really funny. When you've made your mind up about something, like if you're in the chemical industry, the preservatives you use on your wood, they're so safe you can drink them. If you're an environmentalist, then if you look at it, it'll kill you. And so I actually finally found a study. This was for the arsenic-based preservatives. And it was from Taunton Press, Fine Gardening, Fine Woodworking magazine. And they did a neutral study. And they found that the preservatives only went about an inch into the soil, and the roots didn't take it up. Now, since then, we've gone to copper-based preservatives, which are even better. So if you're buying pressure-treated lumber that's copper-based, which is the only kind you can get, it's going to last for 20 years. It's not going to rot or deteriorate. But the thing is, if you're a little squeamish, you can take a little layer of black plastic, like that, you know.
The mesh.
Not the mesh. Actually, solid black plastic,
yeah.
4 mils thick, and line the insides but not the bottom of your raised bed, and that'll keep any little, you know, material away from your soil. So that's what I recommend. You can also use I use a Western red cedar that has a citrus-based stain, but even that does deteriorate relatively quickly. So pressure-treated lumber, again, the plants don't care. They want something to grow in. They want the raised bed. They want the organic fertilizer. They want good drainage. They want good sunlight. They don't really care. But so pressure-treated lumber is not a bad thing.
A couple of basics. Speaking of where to put your garden, where should you put your garden, David?
The sunniest spot you've got. Mm-hmm. And you kind of, even in the fall or the spring or the winter, you just look to wherever your dog or your cat likes to lie and warm themselves, and that's where your garden needs to be, even if it's your front yard. The kind of annuals we're talking about growing, which is basically food crops, it takes a lot of sunlight collected by leaves of a squash plant to make a squash in a matter of days. And if you don't have the sun, you
what's a lot?
8 to 10 hours.
8 to 10 hours of direct sunlight?
Of sitting out there reading the newspaper that you need to put your sunglasses on. If you've got less than eight, you're gonna always be frustrated. There's certain things you can grow, but farmers grow things in fields. They don't grow things in the edges of the woods or in the woods.
Jeff?
Yeah, you know, that whole issue of sun and shade, as a very strict thing, I go with David. Now, sometimes you can be nuanced in that the lettuces and stuff like that will grow in less than that. A lot of the greens will. But, you know, if you want to have some really good Brandywine tomatoes this summer and you put that in a shady spot, I think you'd been better off to save the money and just go to the farmer's market and get some good ones. You know, the quality of light makes a real difference, you know, and can you fudge that a little bit? I think David would agree you can fudge it a little bit, especially, you know, if the shade you get is maybe lighter or dappled or something like that. But then it gets to be like, well, I got to try this and try this and try this. Just find a sunny spot and grow it there.
Look at your garden, Keith. I mean, Chris, look at your garden, what it was now and what it was years ago.
Yeah.
Those trees behind your house
definitely restrict you. They've stolen a lot of my sunlight.
Yep.
Don?
Well, I've gotten very good results with a minimum of six. I never go below six. And if you've got a small amount of sun, you can always plant your plants a little further apart so they're not shading each other.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing I wanted to say is you can check your sunlight on a cloudy day in the winter in 30 seconds. Just face south, trace the path of the sun with your hands. It rises in the southeast, sets in the southwest. And instead of looking at the shadows on the ground, look at how big your sky is. So if there's a tree over here and a house all the way over there and it's all open sky in between, you've got 90 degrees, you've got 6 hours of sun. And again, definitely the more the better.
Very quickly, David, I wanted to ask you about this. Some spring vegetables, fact of the matter is, some spring vegetables here in the Charlotte area do better growing in fall.
Absolutely. We do have two cool seasons. The ones that take the longest to mature, like a Brussels sprout or a cauliflower, is best done in the fall.
There was someone who was just writing in, you have less problem with the bugs.
If you're eating the plant like lettuce, do it in the spring. If you're eating a product of the plant like a broccoli, do it in the fall.
Sounds good. We're back with more about our gardening tips here in the Charlotte area right after this.
Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Chesterbrook Academy, preparing children academically, socially, and emotionally for elementary school, hosting an open house on Saturday, March 21st. Details at chesterbrookacademy.com. Coming up at 10 o'clock on the Diane Rehm Show in about 20 minutes, on Tuesday, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu delivered a much-debated speech to Congress. Diane Rehm and a panel of experts will take a look at the reaction to the speech here and abroad, and at efforts to reduce U.S.-Israeli tensions over a possible nuclear agreement with Iran. That's the Diane Rehm Show coming up in about 20 minutes at 10 o'clock here on 90.7 WFAE. If you have questions about gardening for today's Charlotte Talks, email us at charlottetalks@wfae.org or search for WFAE on Facebook or Twitter. We're coming right back.
The Charlotte City Council has said no to an amendment to the city's anti-discrimination ordinance that would have extended protections to LGBT people.
Every day, Morning Edition and this station bring you stories that help you understand the day's news. I'm Steve Inskeep.
And I'm Marshall Terry. You can depend on NPR and WFAE to have reporters in the field and newsmakers in the studio to put the news into context every day with Morning Edition, weekdays from 5 to 9 on 90.7 WFAE.
Back on Charlotte Talks, I'm Chris Clackham, sitting in for Mike Collins. Our guests today include David Blackley, Master Gardener and owner of Renfro Hardwares in Matthews. Jeff Reeves is a horticulturist, a teacher of all things gardening, a former North Carolina Cooperative Extension agent. Don Rosenberg is founder of Instant Organic Garden. And that includes InstantOrganicGarden.com. And he's also wrote a couple of books, one of which is No Green Thumb Required, Organic Family Gardening Made Easy. How's it made easy?
Well, again, and I'll tell you the secret. It's six words: raised beds, weedless soil, and limited space. A raised bed, as we know, is a box without a bottom. You put it on top of the ground instead of digging in the clay. Two-thirds of the work of a garden is weeding. And when you dig in the clay and you turn that soil over, you expose weed seeds that are dormant for 20 to 50 years. And the rest of your career as a gardener is spent pulling the weeds that you woke up when you tilled. And then the third part of it, limited space, is making a small garden as productive as possible.
No-till gardening, David Blackley, is becoming very popular.
Sure. And it's great for people that just have a small area or just are looking for limited production. And even no-till farming is popular. But that's a kind of a different concept. That's where you're using a lot of pesticides to keep the weeds down as versus mulching like Don's crowd is.
Crystal has emailed in. She says she has an 8 by 40 foot raised bed in the backyard, grows vegetables every year. She has a problem with squashes, melons. The plants get huge but don't make much fruit, either not at all or small ones fall off, die. Huge vine. Tomatoes and peppers are doing great. What's she doing wrong with
tomatoes
squash?
And peppers don't need honeybees. They don't need pollinators nearly as much as the squashes and melons. That's where you've got to have your peripheral vision. You should see 8 or 10 bees or other pollinators working those plants at any one time.
With all the blooms coming off the squash plants?
If the blooms are falling off or you're getting these little immature squashes that are rotten on the end, that's poor pollination.
Well, another thing is poor drainage in the soil and then good air circulation. You want the enemy of a healthy garden is wet leaves. So you want as good air circulation as you possibly can. So give your squashes some space to grow, because if the blossom ends are kept moist, that's where you get a rot there. And so I always take the flowers off once the squash has started to form. I always snip the flowers off. You can fry them and, you know, cook them up, but that always keeps the ends of my squashes drier. And definitely anything you can do to increase your bee population is great.
So when you're talking on the issue of watering, make sure that the water is going towards the root, not on the leaf of the plant.
Right. Water seldom, water deeply, water the base of the plant.
Jeff?
Right. When she's having the problems, the plants that you've mentioned anyway are from two different families. And while they need, in general, the same types of nutrients, they use them different ways. So my first suggestion would be, even though she's maybe created that soil, bought the soil, whatever, it's time for a soil test. She needs to pull some soil samples. And if she does that, you know, April through October, there's no additional funds required from the state of North Carolina to have your soil samples tested. If you do it November through March, there's a $4 surcharge, because that's when a lot of the commercial farmers, and they just need to hire extra help in the soil lab. I'd want to know what the baseline nutrient levels were. I'd want to know what the pH was.
Jeff, without a degree in chemistry, how do I read what my pH is? How do I interpret that?
Okay, it's really simple. Get in the car if you're in Matthews. drive over to Renfro Hardware, show them that thing, and say, look, what is this? You know, I'm there a lot. David can read them. Ted Call, another former extension agent.
Rely upon someone else to tell you what is a good pH level.
Call the Master Gardener Hotline.
There you go. Yeah.
Definitely. That's what they're there for.
Yeah.
Yeah. And my pH reading is 0.7.
Yeah.
Which should be good, right?
Now, I do have to give a shout out to the NCDA. They have tried to make the forms, the test result forms, easier to read. And it's, you know, if you've seen a couple of these and you start to understand what's going on the first time somebody shows it to you, you know, because you got a whole page of text and you really don't need to see about three numbers. They could just, you know, print pH 6.5, you know, and some indices for the other different nutrients. And that's all they really need on the paper. And then say, do this.
The other thing you can do is a soil test by planting plants. And when you look at the plants, you can see if they're yellowish. You know, they're low on nitrogen, and, you know, there's all sorts of things that your plants can teach you. So when she said she had other crops that are doing well, I'm thinking that her soil is pretty good.
Greg writes in, I know the emphasis is on gardening, but my question is about lawn care and seeing how we're talking about pH in the soil. This does fit in right here. I did not get a chance to aerate last fall, Greg writes, but when can I start? For the spring, I want to reseed, fertilize, and I need to control crabgrass. David?
Well, you either plant something or kill something. You really can't do both. So you either decide, do I attack the crabgrass with a pre-emergent, which you need to do now. You need to do a month or so ago. And then that will preclude you from being able to seed until fall. Or you live with the crabgrass and go ahead and plant some. Probably what you're looking for is cool season grass fescue.
Now, you just broke some news on me because I understood that I could still use the pre-emergent, the crabgrass preventer, up until about March 15th.
You can, and that's what's 14 days away. So.
Right, but get going is what you're saying.
And it's more effective if you do two treatments, one sort of December, January, and one sort of February, Marchish.
And Amy has a question for you specifically. She says she bought some vegetable seeds from last year at Renfro's. She placed the unused seeds in my freezer. Are they good to use for planting this spring? Lettuce, broccoli, carrots.
They'll be fine. If you can keep them dry, which is pretty dry in a freezer, and keep them fairly cool and keep the mice away from them, they should be good for another season.
Don, let me let you tackle this one. Justin on Facebook. How do different minerals and atomic compounds affect the texture and taste of vegetables? For example, my hydroponic tomatoes don't taste as good as my soil tomatoes. They are less acidic, less sweet.
Well, you need trace elements in your when you're growing. And I'm not a fan of hydroponics at all because it's just complicated. And you got to be – and the other thing is if you make a mistake in the garden – You know, you water or you stop watering. In a hydroponic situation, you get that fertilizer wrong, you kill everything. So I'm not a fan of that, and I prefer to go with nature. But the question is very valid. You want trace elements. You don't want to just have the NPK, the 10-10-10, or 4-4-4. You want something that has trace elements in it, which is either compost, plantone or worm cast.
Or red clay. Exactly. I'm a big fan of clay. It's got a lot of minerals in it if you can work it right.
We were talking a few moments ago about dealing with all the pests that go in the garden. We were mainly thinking about the tiny bugs and aphids and nematodes and whatever. But what about the bigger pests? What about things like, which, let's see, Kim has been writing in and asking how do you keep cats out of the garden? And why don't we go ahead and tackle squirrels, rabbit, and deer at the same time? Who wants to start?
I'll talk about cats for a second. Cats like bare soil. So plant something, okay? And I actually have a friend who's way into herbs, and she actually put little pencils in the soil. And that was one thing. But the other thing, if you're really in trouble for that, is take some chicken wire and just lay little squares of chicken wire right on the soil. And then once your plants have started to grow, you can try to pull it up or just leave it there. Cats are pretty easy.
Squirrels, deer, much more difficult.
Well, actually, deer are a pain in the butt, and if they're starving, they'll eat pretty much anything. I did finally find a humane wireless deer fence, and it's basically a little gizmo that has two AA batteries in it.
Correct.
And there's an attractant, and they lick it, and it gives them a little shock on their nose or their tongue, and they head for the hills.
You sold those at Renfro's, well, David.
You had 11 in your yard. You showed us earlier today.
I had 11 deer in the backyard day before yesterday. 11 deer, and they're eating right now the small sprouts of the daylilies and as well as the irises and that sort of stuff.
Really, the only thing we found from the gamut of attractants and deterrents and electric fence is a barrier of some kind, whether it's the netting, 7 foot tall netting, or a fence, or some hoops. But you just got to give them reason to go to your neighbors instead of your yard, and that and a good dog. A lot of dogs will run them off, but it's not hard to put up a 7 foot piece of netting around your garden where you can still get to it and just not worry about it.
Jeff?
My parents live in the mountains in Virginia, and there are all kind of critters up there, including bear.
Mm.
And the one thing that we came up with, we made some essentially cages that fit over the raised beds that my parents had. We took welded wire fence and just bent that into shape and set that over the top of the bed, and that kept the deer out, it kept the groundhogs out, it kept the squirrels out, it kept the dogs out, it kept any critters that got past the dogs. You know, those worked very, very well. And we could even on occasion drape some of that plant bed cover or plastic over the top of it and became a mini greenhouse. And we're still using those. And they're up above 3,000 feet, so that extra, you know, protection from the cold is a big help.
Rebecca in Catawba County writes in and says she's been gardening for over 20 years and learned through observation that cardinals, the birds, love to eat the pesky beetles that are attracted to crepe myrtle flowers. And so no need for pesticides. Just watch the beautiful birds enjoy snacking on the bugs. How do you attract the birds?
Give them water. Give them dripping water.
Bluebirds.
Well, they like worms. They like, you know, they like to eat grub worms and other bugs. You can put up bluebird houses is the best way. If you put up housing that's appropriate for bluebird, then you will have bluebirds. They're scouting right now. This is the time to put them out.
Mm-hmm.
Gourds, little wrens, and little wrens that get on your porch and make a nest in a straw hat. Be glad you've got them.
There are specs on bluebird houses,
oh, yeah,
though, that you have to,
yeah,
that only a bluebird would select to nest there.
Brown-headed nuthatch. There are lots of bug-eating birds, and there are birds that eat seeds and bugs. So give them a home. Give them a place to come to.
Something, Don Rosenberg, about this efficiency of space in maximizing the limited amount of space a backyard gardener might have. They might need to resort to what's called the Three Sisters concept, for example, of planting, companion planting.
Correct.
What are the Three Sisters?
Well, there's Ethel, and there's no. Brenda, and Susan. And actually, you know, companion planting has been around forever. And the Indians would, they'd grow corn, and then they would plant beans, you know, about 2 weeks later underneath the corn. And the corn would become a live trellis for the beans. And then between the rows, because corn's like space, they would put some sort of squash or whatever between them. And that's the official Three Sisters. When you have really good soil, good drainage, good fertility, good sunlight, plants can actually grow very well together. It's when you have this monoculture of an entire field stretching as far as the eye can see with one particular variety of corn or whatever, you end up with all sorts of problems, because if one thing attacks it, it gets one kind of disease, your entire landscape is gone. So good conditions and diversity is great.
Jeff?
My grandparents planted what they called October beans in the cornfield for years. I mean, that's just the way I grew.
And let the bean, trellising up the stalk of the corn stalk.
It's a living trellis, and it'll grow right up there. You know, and that goes back to what I was talking about earlier on, about planting a lot of aromatic herbs and flowering plants and stuff out to, you know, help manage the stink bugs and the kudzu bugs. It's the same kind of thing. It's companion planting.
The the point being about the squash plants, particularly in between the green beans and the corn, is that squash is low growing. It grows out, not necessarily up.
It keeps the soil moist. It shades the soil.
And beneath the green bean plant as well as the corn plant.
Exactly. Exactly.
Critters don't like to walk through squashes either. Yeah. But the real key is that the bean is providing the food, the nitrogen, out of the atmosphere. And that's why they really plant the beans.
We've got to touch on this real, real quickly. And that has to do, we're all complaining here, have been for the last 55 minutes, talking about so much rain that we have gotten this winter. We're going to wish we had this much rain come June, July, August, September. What are we going to do about that? What about the watering issue, Jeff?
Well, you know, here's the thing. Even though it's kind of wet right now, if you've been building that good soil with compost or, you know, or the lasagna beds, any of these kind of things, the best storage facility for water is good soil. And so we're recharging the groundwater. And so in a certain sense, the optimal amounts of water will be there when we need them. And what we'll need to do is bridge the gaps. You know, now, if you can add to that by having some rain barrels or cisterns or something like that, that's great. I'm a firm believer in... you know, the more effective ways of irrigation, you know, drip irrigation and soaker hoses more than the overhead stuff, but for sure, you know, so, you know, build your soil, save some extra water if you can, and use the water that you have to put down, do it as effectively as you can.
Don, want to weigh in?
Yeah, water seldom, water deeply. The plant roots go way down into the ground, and if there's a little dry spell, they don't even begin to notice it.
Heard a little idea about planting a piece of PVC pipe 15 to 18 inches tall and water, put it in the ground next to the base of your plant. You like the idea, Dave?
The number one killer of plants we found over the years is the customer, and they do it the way they do it is overwatering. So err on the side of not watering so much.
That's David Blackley, Master Gardener, owner of Rempro Hardware in Matthews. Jeff Reeves is also, has also been with us, horticulturist, former North Carolina Cooperative Extension agent, and Don Rosenberg, founder of InstantOrganicGardening.com.
That's it.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.